This passage that Esther just beautifully read for us is very familiar. In fact, that's pretty much how every sermon or commentary about this passage begins. It begins with a line that says something like, "This is one of the most familiar passages in the Bible, and many people who don't even know much about the Bible know something about this story." When people say the prodigal son, people have an idea about what that is. So I think that especially when something is really familiar, it's really important to look a little bit at context. So in other words, though many people will know that Jesus told this story, I wonder how many people will know on what occasion Jesus told this story. And I think context is important here. John Dominic Crossan argues that parables show the fault lines underneath the comfortable surfaces of the worlds we make for ourselves. Parables can be unsettling experiences, challenging the reconciliations with which we have become comfortable, the ones that we have created, and replacing them with a deeper level of reconciliations, a reconciliation that is contextually situated in the incarnation. There's a lot in that. But it does ask, in what context is this parable happening? Because parables are spoken into a particular context. They are spoken to make us challenged. What fault lines of comfort is Jesus challenging his listeners with? What priorities is he colliding with when he tells this story? And to find that out, we need to go back to the beginning of chapter 15. And it begins this way. All the tax collectors and the sinners were gathering around Jesus to listen to him. The Pharisees and legal experts were grumbling, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." And Jesus told them this parable. So we have Jesus talking with a bunch of grumblers, a bunch of Pharisees who were grumbling. And actually, he went on to tell three parables. This is the third of the three. The first two are very short. You may remember them. There's the shepherd who goes out, leaves his sheep to find the lost sheep, and the woman who searches extravagantly to find this one lost coin. And in both cases, the shepherd and the woman, then when they find what they are looking for, they rejoice. So this story, this third story, has some things in common with that. Again, you have this image of something that was lost or someone that was lost being found, and you have this great rejoicing when the person is found. But there are some differences in this story, too. For instance, the person who gets lost basically gets permission to do so. He goes to his father and he says, "Give me half of what you have." He asks for the means. And then he goes away. And in this case, the father does not go looking for the son. The father allows him to choose this. And instead of searching in the sense of the coin bearer or the shepherd who searched greatly, this father waits patiently and hopefully as he allows the freedom for the son to go out. And of course, perhaps the most obvious difference, in addition to the form, this is a much longer story than the other two, is that there's this third character, this son who this older son, who is contrast to the younger son. And this older son doesn't really step into the limelight of the story until the younger son has returned and the father is rejoiced and there is a party. And then we see this older son who is, well, grumbling. Grumbling much like Jesus' audience was grumbling. He's grumbling that it's not fair that his brother gets a party when he's the one who has been at home working this whole time. In fact, I think the fact that he plays the role of grumbler, much like Jesus' audience is described as being, may challenge us to think about whether when we grumble about other people, we in fact are playing the role of this older son, whenever we do that. It seems like the characters in this story have sort of different priorities, the younger son, the older son. It seems that this older son's priority is duty and even a legalistic kind of duty. And this younger son has strayed from that. He has, in fact, rejected that seemingly, at least initially, when he went out. I mean, and this going out that he did, this asking for his inheritance, this was no small thing. I mean, we can understand why the older son was angry. When we grumble, we're going to want to justify ourselves exactly like he probably did. He worked hard all these years, and he expected half of his father's property, but when his brother asks for half of the property, I mean, think about that. He asked for half of the inheritance, but what was the inheritance? The inheritance was property. So the father probably had to go out and sell maybe up to half of his land. Land that could produce more wealth, that could be accumulated so that in the end, both of them would have more. And now that the son is back, and the father's so happy to have him back, who knows, but the father might give him more again. And all of that results, the son fears, in him getting less. And so in his view, for him to get what he deserves, the other son must be excluded. But this seems to be a story in which the father is not particularly interested in excluding someone based on these rules and regulations. No, the father acts like a loving parent who welcomes home a lost beloved child. And it's a story in which he embraces him with open arms. The son is welcomed back fully, fully included. And so I got to thinking about, is this story a story about inclusion? I mean, after all, inclusion is one of those things I'm hearing a lot about in the news today. I'm hearing worries that people feel that other people, if certain people are included, that somehow that means they get less. That in fact we need to be careful about how wide we draw the boundaries. And then when I thought about whether this story was about inclusion, it made me think about this phrase DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, that we are being told is no longer a priority for our nation. Is this a story about inviting us to prioritize diversity, equity, and inclusion? Is this a story that applies to us today with these DEI questions? I do think it does invite the care that it calls on to include. I mean, remember the audience again. Remember the context. Jesus is talking to these grumbling Pharisees whose job it was to enforce laws, to decide what was included and what was excluded from being appropriate behavior. That was their job. And there's a value in that. There is a sense that in drawing those boundaries, in deciding what our laws are, we can better form a community that is not chaotic and in fact that does say what our priorities are, that does help understand what morality is. And so these Pharisees were probably in many ways doing what they thought was right. But when we only focus narrowly on the priority of laws that include and exclude and determine that, it's very easy to slide into a morality that is about ideas and laws and behavior rather than about people. And you see that difference when you see the interaction at the end of this story between the older brother and the father. The story ends basically with this little interchange where the son says to his father, "Look, I have served you all these years and I've never disobeyed your instructions, yet you've never given me as much as a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours returned, after gobbling up your estate and on prostitutes, you slaughtered the fatted calf for him." And then his father said, "Son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead, and he is alive. He was lost, and he is found." Do you notice the wording? The son, the older son, speaks his complaint to the father and then refers to that complaint as being about your son, distancing himself in relation from this person. But the father speaks in love and relationship, welcoming both his older son and pointing out, "This is your brother that we are celebrating." I think it is when we lose that priority of recognizing we are all part of God's family, of the human family, of God's created world, connected and siblings to one another, that we can spiral into this question of exclusion rather than inclusion, of othering rather than welcoming. The D in DEI stands for diversity. And there are all kinds of diversity that we could talk about and that we should. But as it relates to this story, I thought about what is the diversity in this story? Well, there is certainly the diversity of the Pharisees and how they see themselves versus the sinners, the tax collectors, and the sinners. These are the people that the Pharisees have othered in their grumbling. These are the people about whom they are grumbling. And these are the people who essentially form a different social class in that society. And so there is this sort of class diversity in the question that is asked to Jesus. You are hanging out with them instead of us, or even also them plus us. That doesn't make sense to us. So there is some sort of diversity, I think, of sort of social class in this. There's also this diversity of the two brothers. Remember, the one brother, his whole goal is to go off and explore in a foreign land, a land that probably had different customs, different ideas, different types of people. Again, moving into the other from the familiar. And the other, the older brother, wants to stay with the familiar and the known. And so I think there is some diversity here as well that is inviting us to think beyond what is familiar, to be open to new things and new people and new ways of seeing things. Maybe a diversity of priorities. There's lots of ways we can think about that. But I think where this DEI comparison breaks down is on the E, equity. I'm not really sure that this story is so much about equity. According to Merriam-Webster.com, equity is defined as fairness or justice in the way people are treated. Now, certainly, in many ways, in terms of the law, I want to be clear, this is probably a good priority for us to have. But I don't really think it's the point of this story. In fact, the grumbling people almost use fairness as an argument, that it would be fair to treat somebody the way that they deserve based on their behavior, which we disapprove of. And so fairness is kind of a tricky thing. I don't think it's the point of this story at all. In fact, I think this story is about being prodigal. The definition of prodigal is actually extravagance. Extravagance or characterized by profuse and wasteful expenditure, lavish. And we often label this story commonly for years as the prodigal son, but many scholars argue that we really ought to label it the prodigal father. Yes, the son did choose to go off and live extravagantly with a priority of satisfying certain sort of physical or emotional extravagance pleasure that he deemed as such until that didn't work for him anymore. But the father really lives the life of extravagance. Extravagant love, extravagant welcome, extravagant grace. This is a story about a father who is extravagant with his love. And again, this stands in contrast to the grumblers who want to parse out their love in limited ways to only certain people. Now, I think this is a story not really about equity, about us getting what we deserve, but about a loving father, a loving parent who recognizes all sibs as priorities and who asks us to see one another as priorities as well. I think this is a story about an extravagant parent for whom nothing will limit our welcome, even when we feel unworthy and are unworthy. One commentator puts it this way: the parable of the prodigal son is in this way a prelude to the resurrection. It is an Easter story of its own kind, an Easter story that reaffirms that God's kingdom entails death-defying love. In God's kingdom, the law is grace, the currency is mercy, and the economy is forgiveness everlasting. For us to be kind, part of this kingdom is sort of even a better DEI, diversity and extravagant grace and inclusion. And we are all welcome in that kingdom.